try to make a difference in a small way to try and help that bigger problem, because it's one of those things, you know, we all need to do something. We all need to act. We all need to make a difference in our own small way. And this is just kind of my way of doing it. 80% of efficiency is actually in the design of the building. Doesn't matter whether it's residential or commercial. 80% of it's in the design. So if you design it well up front, you can sort of get rid of a lot of energy efficiency issues right up front.
That's Danielle King, and this is Homestyle Green. G'day, and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. Danielle King helps people make a better place to live through her company Green Moves. She's based in Brighton, Victoria, in Australia. And this conversation is about her journey towards helping people with sustainability and making a business out of it, because it's all well and good wanting to give advice and encourage people on this pathway, but if you want to do it as a part of your job or as a full-time job, then how can you do that? How can you get paid to give good advice, especially as Danielle explains, the market can often get skewed by good intentioned government policies that put some funding out there and change the expectations of the market. So we talk a little bit about that, as well as some of the tips and some of the advice that Danielle gives to her clients. I started out by asking Danielle how she got into sustainability in the first place.
Oh, it was I call it a green change. It was my background is basically IT and technology. I've been working in that field for a long time. I'm not going to say how many years because that'll give my age away. But about probably 15 years ago, moved back to Australia because I spent some time in the UK and just thought, you know, I didn't like the way the world appeared to be going. The climate issue was becoming more and more of a problem. I was sick of IT and sick of working in big corporates, and I was looking for a change of career, basically. I've always been interested in sustainability, and it always been something very close to my heart in terms of don't waste water, don't waste energy, you know, don't create plastic when you don't need to, this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And at the time, about 12 years ago, there wasn't much in terms of formal training around, but I did find a course on home sustainability assessment locally. So I did that, and second day there, it was like, no, this is what I want to do. This is awesome, really interesting, can really help a lot of people save money, you know, live better, live more comfortably, et cetera. And it kind of went from there. So it was very much...
Was this before or after? Because you had some education experience with schools, is that right?
Yes. Well, I did my qualification to become a teacher or a trainer and educator in the field after I did all this.
Because
stepping out of like one rather well-paying career into something that was kind of more a hobby at the time, and sort of, you know, with the income degradation that comes with that. Thankfully, I have a very supportive husband, so that sort of resolved that problem for a while. But it just went from there. So by the time I finished the first, like that particular course, I was looking around for other things, and then I found that there was a diploma course came available that wasn't there the year before. At Swinburne. So I did the sustainability course for residential. There was absolutely nothing around for businesses at the time to how to work with businesses to be more efficient. So I did the diploma as well, which covered off a little things in terms of corporate sustainability, but not much. And started looking at what sort of work could be done that would, you know, help people, help businesses reduce bills, because energy prices were starting to go up and you could see it on the radar. There were issues with climate and sustainability and people talking about get off coal and all this sort of thing, and no one really understanding why and how that was such an issue. But on top of all that, I had a son. So my biggest concern became the future that he was going to be heading into, because the future, you know, his years coming on, his next 20 years, and he's just gone 17, his next 20 years are going to be very different to my 20 years at that age. And, you know, I literally fear for his future. I fear for the food security. I fear for the temperatures he's going to have to survive and try to thrive in. I fear for the job market for him. It's it's not going to be anywhere near what it was when we were, when, you know, when I was younger. So trying to make a difference, and I sort of turned to sustainability as well in a way to, okay, well, I can help people make their homes more efficient, and we can make our own things more efficient and businesses more efficient, but, you know, that's a small contribution to the future in trying to deal with climate change problems. So I became a Al Gore climate reality leader trained, and work in the sector at the time was very slow because people, Green Loans program had just tanked, basically, for want of a better word. There was no work out there for residential assessors. The business sector hadn't quite got there yet. And so I thought, well, I can teach. So I did the qualification to become a teacher and did some teaching at Swinburne for a while in the field. And then things started to pick up. So I ended up on a few advisory boards for sustainability, Building Designers Association of Victoria, who are now Design Matters National. Done some work with the Victorian State Government and some national work on sustainability and on the training qualifications for assessors. And it was really just all of that as a way to take action, try to make a difference in a small way to try and help that bigger problem, because it's one of those things, you know, we all need to do something. We all need to act. We all need to make a difference in our own small way. And this is just kind of my way of doing it. So it's
yeah. It sounds like your success at the end there is to do with sort of putting yourself out there, because, like you say, it's all well and good to go and do a qualification, but there may not be any jobs at the end of it. Like it's great you can go become trained at how to do home assessments, but without any funding program, is there anyone willing to pay for your services to come and assess their home to make it more sustainable?
Well, that's been the big change because, you know, 10, 12 years ago, you know, with the Green Loans program in Australia, what came up was, oh, well, the expectation that it should be free, right? So,
right.
Because
there might be some people who aren't familiar with how that worked. What, can you give us a quick rundown of what the home scheme
the Green Loans program was? Yeah, look, the Green Loans scheme, it's probably a bit like the Pink Bats insulation scheme was back in the day. Yep. The intentions of the program were actually really, really good. It was just that it wasn't well managed, and a lot of rogue operators got into the sector and caused some major problems, which is why it was pulled. But the basic operation of it was to send home sustainability assessors out to residential homes, and they would do an assessment on the home and give the householder advice and guidance on what they could do to improve their home to make it more energy efficient, cost efficient to run and comfortable to be in. And of those recommendations, they could then take, if the recommendation was something like you need to upgrade insulation in your roof or you need to upgrade your heating and cooling system to something more efficient, then they could take that report and go to a bank, and there were several banks that were offering what they called green loans, hence the name, and they would get a discounted rate to borrow the money to make those changes. But what happened was a lot of people went out there and did all the assessments. The federal government paid for the assessment, so there was no charge to the householder. The loan uptake was very, very low. The accreditation process, because every man and their dog suddenly did a 30-minute CD online training course, you know, in some cases, which was very, very poor.
And we're not
giving the correct advice, and it just kind of ended up with some complaints, and then unfortunately, you know, the program just died as a result. Assessors couldn't get accredited because the accrediting bodies were snowed under with applications, and it's a real shame because there were some very good assessors out there and some who'd been very well trained. Like there were two or three organisations in particular who did very, very good training, and the assessors that came out of that were really highly qualified and very well skilled and did a great job. But there ended up being hundreds of assessors out there nationally who just did like a 30-minute course on a CD at home in their lounge room and went out trying to give advice and it just didn't work.
So you said that skewed the market a little bit and
it did actually,
set up the expectation of free assessments.
It did. It caused a problem for a good 5 years in terms of like when that program stopped, which was not long after I was qualified, actually. When that program stopped and they weren't accepting any more registrations, then if you went out there and tried to sell it as a service, no one wanted it because they said, oh, but that should be free. The government pays for that. And that's taken a very long time to get rid of that mindset so that you can actually have a business doing that. So during that first 5 or 6 years of my business, when you couldn't get anyone really, we'd probably get one or two inquiries a year. And then as soon as you told them they had to pay for it, they went away, right? Wow. Which was pretty devastating.
Not much of a business model.
It was not a business model at all. So you then had to find, I ended up looking and say, okay, well, these are the skills that I've got. How can I use those skills to add value somewhere else and do something else? So I created a few different services and products like building plan reviews for people who are building to offer advice on that. And that sort of took off very slowly, but, you know, it's got there now. We do quite a few of those each year now. We do things like if they've got a particular problem, we would come in and give them advice on that and just charge an hourly rate rather than a full assessment fee. Primarily I thought, no, the best way to do this is, you know, there's not a lot of work in this thing. So either get out there and start teaching it, which was when I did the teaching qualification, and upskill yourself in other things. So I basically spent a good 2 years educating, looking up, researching and doing a whole lot of education in the business sector on, you know, what is it about small businesses that you can help them with? How can you make their, you know, if you go into a hotel, for example, how can you make their refrigeration and their cold rooms work better? How can you, what energy efficiency opportunities are there? And just digging up all the research that I could find on the topics for commercial lighting, commercial heating, cooling, lifts, all the sorts of things that you find in commercial businesses. And then I put some commercial business services together, and then I did some energy, taught myself how to do energy auditing, which thankfully was then verified by the Schneider Eco-Exit program. Well, you know, a lot of people were going, but my bill's so high, where's it coming from? You know, residential and commercial. So being able to go through, I've done a bit of accounting in my background, so I'm quite familiar with, you know, how to balance things. So we started doing that. Okay, well, your bill's this, and let's look at, you know, what you're using, when you're using it, how many hours are you using it for, and you can actually work it out pretty reasonably accurately without monitoring to, you know, where most of the energy is going, and then what. But then you can give targeted advice on what you can do, what the householder can do about it to rectify it. And sometimes it's behavioural. Quite often, actually, it's behavioural. People going out, leaving things on all the time. Or just not realising that their fan is actually way more efficient than their air conditioner is, and they should maybe use that first. You know, little things like that helps.
Is that both residential and commercial, those types of that type of advice?
So we found that for commercial side of things, a lot of business owners, you know, especially small SME businesses, they're not very well serviced by the market, or weren't at the time. So there was a lot of big companies out there charging big fees to go in and do, you know, very detailed audits and monitoring of big commercial sites, but there wasn't anyone really looking after that SME sector. So that's the sector that I targeted and I work in. And we've done hundreds now of energy audits and energy assessments for small businesses, some of which have been funded through Victorian or federal government programs. But mostly people have realised that there's value in it. And to be honest, you know, from all the ones we've done, we've found energy savings anywhere. The minimum I think we ever found in a site was about 16% savings over a year. And the maximum we found was 75% savings that we cut their bill down by a year. They had some really dodgy equipment. Stuff was being left on overnight that they didn't realise. So, and a lot of that was behavioural change. So, and sometimes it's their billing. Sometimes they've got the wrong, they're on the wrong tariffs. But it's a whole, you know, it can be, the good thing about it is it's highly variable.
I mean, as a business advisor, if you could offer 16% savings on the operating expenses, regardless of what it is, I mean, that's a significant savings of any cost item.
Well, we found that most of the time, probably not all the time, but I'd say probably 80 or 90% of the time, the cost of the energy assessment or audit is recovered within 12 months of implementing the changes that we suggest.
It's
usually worth
it. So on the commercial side, you've got quite a few schemes that you operate with or that are available in Australia. So you've got the Nat Hurst, sorry, the Neighbours. You've got Nat Hurst in the residential.
Yeah, Nat Hurst is a residential scheme. Neighbours is the commercial building rating system.
Yep. And then you've got the likes of ISO 14001, which is sort of environmental quality.
Management and monitoring.
Management. And then City Switch. So there's a whole range of programs there.
Yep.
Do you rely, as a consultant, do you rely on having those programs, or is there quite a lot of work that falls outside of that, particularly in the SME space where it's just small companies who want a little bit of advice? They don't necessarily need or want to go or need to go down that qualification or certification route.
Yeah. When it comes to small businesses, it's usually not financially viable for them to go through the cost and the process of getting some of those ISO standards.
Yeah.
It's very easy for them to implement certain things, depends on what it is. Sorry, you said something then and I was going to answer it and I can't remember what it was you said now. Oh, about the program. For any business to rely on the program. Look, one thing I learned very, very quickly was do not ever rely on government programs to run a business, ever, because they're so variable and they change frequently. I mean, that at the moment there's quite a few energy efficiency programs around in Australia, and that's primarily because of the COVID recovery stimulus. But before that, you know, you get the occasional program come out for residential assessments or for commercial building assessments or commercial business assessments. But it's very ad hoc and it's usually very time bound, so 6 months at the most. So if you can't make a business operate on its own 2 feet without government funding, then I think as soon as you lose that funding, you come unstuck very quickly. So you've got to...
As per the green loan scheme.
Well, that's right. So one of the things I found, and part of the reason that when you look on my website, we do so many things, is because quite often when the residential sector is quiet and there's nothing going on, the commercial sector is often busy. And we've found that's the way that we've been able to keep going for the last 10 years is by using our knowledge in different ways to, you know, educate, create different services, do different things depending on where the market's at. Like right now, we've got quite a bit of residential work going on because there's been some councils that are doing some scorecard assessments and things like that. So I've got some great local assessors helping me with those. Commercial sector is a bit quiet, but they've just released some grant funding, which we've put some applications in for. And if we get those, then by the end of next month, we'll be pretty busy on that. But by then, the residential stuff will have slowed down. So it's all about juggling. I think it's very hard at the moment. If you're just doing residential assessments, I think it would be very hard to have a full-time income just doing that in Australia right now.
You mentioned have you got a bit of a team there at the moment?
Look, Green Moves is mainly me. I have a couple of independent assessors that I use for different things. I've got a couple of really good scorecard assessors locally and interstate that I use for when I get interstate inquiries. I refer the work back to them. I've got I do carbon accounting as well, which is something we've recently started doing. I've got somebody else to help me with that when I need. I've got someone else who can help me with commercial audits if I get overloaded. And they're all basically subcontractors, but they do things the way I want them and the reports in the way I want, and I quality check all the work before it goes out. So it's it's a small team that kind of varies depending on what work is in at the time. And it does change. It sort of ebbs and
flows. And it sounds like you have a big variety there. So I'm not sure that you have a standard client. But are there some typical concerns that you have in the residential space? What sort of people call you up and ask for your help? And what are some of the main things that they want help with?
The majority of people that ring us regarding residential things are usually doing one of two things. They've either got high power bills and are trying to find a way to reduce them and not quite sure where to start. So the beauty of the residential assessments is that, especially the scorecard assessments, is that you can go in, you can look at, because you look in the ceiling and look at insulation and you check the windows and the drafts and the heating systems and all that sort of anything that's on site that could impact it. And you can give them very good targeted advice on what to do and how to fix it. And especially with the energy bill side of things, we can also check rates and things like that. The other one that we get quite a bit of now is people who are building or renovating. wanting to know, you know, are their plans okay? What should they do to make their house as efficient as possible before they actually, you know, lay the slab and do all this stuff? Because 80% of efficiency is actually in the design of the building. Doesn't matter whether it's residential or commercial. 80% of it's in the design. So if you design it well up front, you can sort of get rid of a lot of energy efficiency issues right up front. And when you're renovating, that's an optimal time, you know, when you're changing flooring or opening walls up or, you know, adding new rooms. That's the perfect time and the most cost-effective time to put, you know, some of these upgrades in, because adding insulation when you're building a new room is nothing. You know, it's a couple of $100 extra. Having to add it in after the house is built could cost a few thousand. So, you know, it comes down to common sense in cost and things like that. But so there's the main things in terms of the trends in energy efficiency in homes has been very much bills getting higher. We notice an increase in calls, especially in January, February and July, August when the bills go up. They tend to go up twice a year here.
Yeah.
And you know,
but yeah, probably increasingly in the summer. Is that right? I mean, it was always a winter peak, but is it more and more people seeing higher bills in summer now?
Actually, in the residential sector, no, not so much. In the residential sector, you get, in Victoria anyway, the majority of the bill is still in heating in winter, even though the climate is changing slightly. But the trend is now moving up, so we are starting to see a lot more people, especially when you get those 40-degree days, air conditioning coming on and things. But with the people putting so much solar on their roofs now, that seems to be circumventing some of that. So so still in Victoria, as far as I'm aware, it's still higher energy use in winter than it is in summer. But in commercial, it's the opposite. Yeah. In commercial, you get higher energy use during the summer months than you do in the winter months.
And sticking with the residential side, do you work with architects? If someone's planning a new home or doing something, do you sort of work alongside their builder, their architect, or any existing team that they already have?
Yes, absolutely, we do that. We've only done it a few times. Not quite sure why. I guess architects like to do their own thing and so do builders.
Yeah.
But the twice that we've done it recently have been really because the householder or the owner of the building wanted me to look over things. And I think once they realised I wasn't there to, you know, give them a hard time about anything, but help encourage them and show them different ways that they could do things to make the building more efficient and why it mattered that the window was here and not there, then, you know, they've been pretty receptive to it most of the time, which has been good.
Yeah. Awesome. Mm. You got, like you said earlier on, you've got a lot of things going on on various boards and helping out across the place as well, which is fantastic. Obviously, really passionate about helping to move the industry forward. But
lucky I love what I do.
Absolutely, yeah. Where is the best place for people to find you and to get in touch?
Usually through the website, just greenmoves.com.au. There's a contact page there. They can email me through, or you can ring the mobile or the landline. Always leave a message if I don't pick up because I'm often in meetings. But do leave a message. I do always call back, and I'll always respond to an email.
And there's a heap of information there about all the programs and all the services that you've got, some blogs and some other resources as well. So I'll definitely put a link to that.
Yeah, we try very hard to sort of share the information as much as possible. You know, we've got, in fact, I just updated the other day, the build and renovation checklist that we've got, which is for householders who are building or renovating, the things that they should do when they're doing the build, things that they can do after or things that they can retrofit later, so that that helps with the cost planning of what they might focus on first. So we just updated that the other day. So, you know, we really give away a lot of information, and I think it's important because I'm more concerned about people getting educated in this field than I am anything else. Mm-hmm. So, but also similarly, you know, if people want something particular, and this has happened a few times as well, where, you know, they don't know who to go to, but they want to ask somebody a question, then we'll often do that too. So, or just because a service isn't listed on the website doesn't mean we won't do it.
Danielle King there of Green Moves, and you can check out her website, greenmoves.com.au. She does have some fantastic resources on that website, and as she says, she gives a lot away for free. So go over to greenmoves.com.au and have a look at all the resources and quite a long list of services that Danielle offers. As she alluded to, she's diversified quite a lot because you can never be too sure what's going to be in demand and what's not. But very pleasing that the demand in general for these types of services has dramatically increased, particularly over the last couple of years, and probably even more so in the last year as people have spent more time in their homes and realized they're not quite as good as they would hope in terms of efficiency, but also health and comfort. So, yeah, definitely check out all those resources, and you can also find out, follow her on Facebook and Twitter as well. Where you can also find me, I'm Twitter at at M Cutler Welsh, and Facebook Homestyle Green, and I'm on Instagram a little bit too, but also LinkedIn. So love to reach out and connect with you there, as well as the website homestylegreen.com. Thank you very much for listening in. Now go make a better place to live.